Rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Bond, Judge Bjorkman, Judge Bratfold, the Honorable Rachel F. Bond presiding.
Good morning. Please be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is March 19th, 2025. We have four cases on our calendar this morning, three oral cases and one non-oral. Today's arguments are being live streamed, and we are making an audio recording. The audio recording is usually available on the court's website in about a day. A reminder that no other recordings are permitted without the express permission of the court. With that, I'll call the first case. Counsel's already seated. Case number A241244, State of Minnesota versus Jody Anderson. The record should reflect that Judge Bratfold is substituting in for Judge Reyes on this matter. Counsel, you'll each have 15 minutes to present your arguments. Appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. The podium can be adjusted for your comfort. Before you begin your argument, please state your name and identify the party that you represent. Counsel for appellant, you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, and may it please the court. My name is Allison Fabianski Eklund, and I am the attorney for the appellant, Jody Lynn Anderson. This is a case about dog barking. It is not a terribly complicated case. There are not a lot of issues in the case at hand, and there are some procedural issues that have been briefed. And in the interests of serving my client's strongest interest in being heard, I'm going to focus on those issues that matter the most to them.
Counsel, I'm going to ask you to pause just for a second. Marshall, has the clock started? Thank you. Go ahead.
Jody Lynn Anderson and her husband have a farm in Minnetrista, Minnesota. It's not a large farm, but it is a working farm. It is an agricultural operation within the meaning of the Right to Farm Act, which is the main reason that they are here on appeal. Ordinance 1110.17 subdivision 1 relates to habitual barking of dogs, and it is that ordinance subsection or section under which she was charged and convicted of 5 out of 7 citations.
Counsel, do you agree that this ordinance that you just referenced is a law that declares the act of keeping habitually barking dogs constitutes a public nuisance?
Your Honor, yes, the ordinance does that. However, the note that subsection 6 of 1110.17 relates to nuisance abatement. So we have to be careful here to make sure that we understand that she was charged under subdivision 1, not subdivision 6, and that matters under the Right to Farm Act, because what this appeal is not is an appeal from a determination on a nuisance abatement action, and it is not an appeal from a determination of a conviction under the criminal code 609.74. So let's focus for sure on what this case is and what it is not. This is a mere appeal of 5 out of 7 citations under section 17 subdivision 1. And the reason why that matters, I'll get to in a moment. It has to do with the Right to Farm Act and whether or not the appellant can meet the requirements for immunity. There's another statute at issue here, and it was not raised below, but I'll explain that it does have an impact on analysis under the Right to Farm Act. That statute is 97B.645. And that statute expressly states that a person may use guardian dogs or guardian animals to repel, harass, or kill wolves that threaten livestock or domestic animals or pets. And so that particular—
Well, I don't think anyone's saying that your client cannot keep dogs.
True.
But can't have dogs that are habitual barkers. So what's the impact? I mean, I understand that 97B.645, you know, is focused on protecting wolves, right? And
yes,
these are really does lay out situations in which someone can either try to repel a wolf or be absolved of liability for killing a wolf.
Right.
I'm having a hard time understanding how that implicates the issues before us.
The statute is a public policy in Minnesota that the use of guardian animals is an approved and recognized ordinary agricultural practice. And that's what we're getting at in the use of this. Not that it automatically bars the prosecution of somebody for keeping habitually barking dogs. But let's keep in mind that these dogs are not habitual barkers. They are trained to use their voices to repel wolves and other predators.
The district courts found otherwise, right? That in fact these dogs were considered habitual barkers because they were found to have barked repeated intervals of at least 5 minutes that are audible from any neighboring property.
Right? That's true. They would, they, in terms of enforcing the ordinance, that was what the trial focused on entirely, was whether or not the ordinance provisions were met by the charges. And 5 out of 7 of the citations were found to have met those conditions. So the real question here is whether or not the Right to Farm Act contemplates this type of use of a guardian animal when a different state statute for a related but distinct purpose says that this is a normal agricultural operation. So that's the point that my clients wanted to have heard. They wanted you to know that the use of guardian dogs is not for the purpose of keeping habitual barkers, but for the purpose, rather, of repelling predators. The predation by wolves and other mammals, as well as raptors and weasels and all manner of predators, have caused severe harm to the farm operation at issue that, frankly, the defendant was not allowed to testify about. Because the issue of the Right to Farm Act and whether or not this analysis could be completed and testimony collected was not permitted by the trial court. And in fact, it was never even recognized by the trial court that despite the first order, January 2nd, 2024, the court held that testimony would be required to determine whether the Right to Farm Act would apply. But then in the final order, simply said, we already determined that it didn't apply. So,
and I agree, that seems to be an omission from the district court's ultimate verdict and findings.
True.
But as I read the trial transcript, your client did offer testimony, you know, that would support a finding that the Right to Farm Act apply. I mean,
yeah.
She testified about the scope of the operation, how long it had been in operation, mm-hmm. what she did, the fact that, you know, it was commercial, she sold product. I mean, mm-hmm. so the evidence was arguably there, wasn't it? Just not a finding.
That's right. The evidence was there. She testified as best she could about as much information as she could about the nature of the agricultural operation, the use of the guardian dogs to repel predators. I think she mentioned that the Great Pyrenees dogs that she bred and raised for sale and for use as guardian animals had been used for over 1,000 years for this purpose. So if you look at all of the requirements of the Right to Farm Act, I think she can make a pretty good case that she met those requirements. And as I said earlier, it's important to consider the statute or the ordinance, rather, under which she was charged. This is not a nuisance abatement action yet. It could have been in the future based on these convictions, but it hasn't. Those determinations haven't been made yet. So it's not a 609.74 action that she's appealing from, and it is not an action to abate a public nuisance. The public nuisance determination happens after the upheld convictions of one of the other nuisance sections, including Section 1, habitual barking. So we're just not there yet. Those determinations have not yet happened. That's why she's here. She would like to be heard on the issue of the Right to Farm Act. She'd like to be given the opportunity to flesh out testimony if needed at the trial court level, and would like to have the district court take the time to actually do what it said was required to be done, which is to take testimony and make findings about the applicability of the Right to Farm Act.
Counsel, I think I heard you acknowledge a minute ago that the precise preemption argument you're making before this court was not made to the district court. Is that argument properly before us?
Your Honor, we do have certain procedural challenges. So I would certainly direct the court's attention otherwise. I would say that the most promising, the strongest argument they have is on the direct applicability of the Right to Farm Act as opposed to the preemption argument. And that is all that I have to say, because I think, as I've said, the most important piece that my clients would like the court to consider is whether it was proper that the trial court said that it would make a determination, said that it would collect this evidence, and then refused to do the analysis. And if additional information is needed before the trial court, then we ask that it be remanded for that information. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your argument. Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Calvin Lee, and I represent the respondent, the City of Minnetrista. This case is about a municipal government exercising the authority expressly granted to it by the state legislature to regulate matters that primarily affect its local population, an authority which Minnesota courts have consistently recognized and upheld throughout its jurisprudence. And that line of case law makes sense because ordinances, such as the one at issue here, emanate from city council members who, by virtue of their nature as elected officials, are motivated to pass regulations that best serve the goals and needs of their constituents. Here, the City of Minnetrista exercised its regulatory authority by enacting MCO 1110.17 Subdivision 1.
And you agree this isn't a nuisance abatement action. This is simply an action to... a petty misdemeanor action to find that the barking dogs constitute a nuisance.
That's correct, Your Honor. I would agree on that point.
Do you agree? We had a discussion during appellant's argument that it does seem that the district court made an initial ruling on the motion to dismiss that indicated it needed evidence to determine the right to farm issue, and then in its verdict and findings seemed to say, well, I already decided that. If you agree that that was an error, what is the remedy that should flow from that for appellants?
Understood, Your Honor. I would certainly agree that there is some inconsistency between the pretrial district court order and what they issued in their sentencing order. But I feel that there is no need to remand in this case because as a matter of law, there is no right to farm statute defense available for the appellant. And that's true for a number of reasons. First is found in the language of the statute itself. When we look at the right to farm statute, what it's meant to do is protect agricultural operations from nuisance liability in certain circumstances. And the statute defines an agricultural operation as a facility and its appurtenances for the production of crops and livestock. Simply put, a habitually barking dog does not fall under that definition.
What's the most opposite authority for that proposition? Are there any cases that define facility and its appurtenances with respect to this statute?
Your Honor, I don't know with respect to the right to farm statute. The case law is pretty scant as far as that specific statute. I would point to cases that discuss the definition of appurtenance with respect to real property. In our brief, we cite the case of Ethan versus Reed Masonry. And in that case, the court described appurtenances and defined them as both incorporeal rights, such as easements or licenses, and then additionally things such as fixtures. So when we look at the common thread between those items, we see that they're sort of inanimate subparts to a larger whole, the facility or the real property. In this case, it would be a farming facility. So when we talk about a right to farm statute, the agricultural operation is made up of a facility, normally a farm, and its appurtenances, that is, fixtures, easements, or licenses necessary to operate that farm. And a habitually barking dog simply does not fall under that definition. What appellant is basically trying to argue here on appeal is that her dogs are a generally accepted agricultural practice, and therefore there should be a right to farm defense in that because of that. But Minnesota case law has expressly rejected that merely complying with accepted agricultural practices can preclude all nuisance liability claims. Cases such as Vendinger versus Forest Farms, as we said in our brief, stand for that proposition.
What evidence would be necessary, or is there any evidence, as far as you're concerned, that through which the appellant could have established that keeping the dogs under these circumstances was a generally accepted agricultural practice?
Certainly, Your Honor. In fact, the case that appellant cites in her brief, I believe it's an Oregon case, Hood River County versus Mazara, kind of speaks to that point. What we had in Oregon, though, we had a specific statute that precluded municipalities from passing regulations that impinged on farm practices. So going past agricultural aberration to get to the actual practices themselves. And the appellant in that case was bringing her claim on the theory that her dogs were a generally accepted practice under the under that statute, and therefore the ordinance was invalid, as necessary for the right to farm statute. So similar to here, the right to farm statute requires that the ordinance be invalid for some reason. And appellant has not presented any evidence to state as such. But going back to your question as the type of evidence that could be presented, if there were a statute like that, then that talked about farms practices specifically. In that case, what the appellant did was they brought a witness from the Oregon Department of Agriculture who testified that the manner in which she kept her dogs was a generally accepted agricultural practice. And the court there in Hood River County found that by presenting that uncontradicted evidence, that triggered the state's burden to disprove her affirmative defense beyond a reasonable doubt. In other words, the appellant there was able to satisfy their burden of production to present their defense by bringing in that testimony. And when we look at the trial transcript, we don't see any testimony that would be analogous to that. Under this right to farm statute, we see the term generally accepted agricultural practice is specifically defined in subdivision one as a practice that is accepted by farmers either in the county in which defendant resides, in this case that'd be Hennepin County, or in a contiguous county. So what the appellant could have done at trial was to bring in a witness or testify or bring some sort of evidence to suggest that the manner in which she kept her dogs was consistent with what farmers in Hennepin County or a neighboring county did, but the record is completely absent of such testimony. And therefore, in this case, appellant did not meet her burden of production to present the defense, and the state was therefore not required to prove disprove that defense beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's one of the reasons why, although the district court had some inconsistency in its pretrial ruling and its post-trial ruling, there's no need for remand because as a matter of law, appellant is not able to present an affirmative defense of under the right to farm statute. Now, turning briefly to the preemption argument, Your Honor's kind of touched on this. I do believe it is waived because appellant argued a different theory of preemption below related to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency noise level standards. One other point I wanted to make on that, though, is if the court were to find preemption, it would not just be invalidating Minnetrista's ordinance, but same or nearly identical ordinances across the state. I took a look at a few of the neighboring cities and what ordinances they have in relation to dog barking. And I tried to look for some cities that had more of what I would consider a farm reputation. So I looked at Cologne City ordinance, and under section 92.07 of their code of ordinances, they define habitual barking. They prevent habitual barking with almost identical language, stating that it shall be unlawful for a person to keep a habitually barking dog, defined as a dog that barks for repeated intervals of at least 5 minutes with less than 1 minute of interruption, and that the barking is audible off of the at a property outside of the premises. So that's almost the identical language that we see here. And I just wanted to highlight the point out that the practical effect of finding preemption in this case would be to invalidate nearly every city in the state's ordinance related to habitual barking. And that cannot be the correct legal result here. And Your Honors, if there's no further questions, I believe I have touched on everything I wanted to hit on.
Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. I have only one point that I wanted to make in response to the oral argument of the respondent, and that is relating to the burden of production. I believe if the court looks at the record, that when the motion to dismiss was brought, there was an email that was representing one of the witnesses that the defendant wanted to call at trial. And that was someone from the Department of Agriculture who had sent an email saying that she had a very good argument under the Right to Farm Act that her activities were immunized because she used these guardian dogs and it was an ordinary agricultural practice. That witness was not allowed to be called at trial. And so you don't see the you don't see that person listed as a witness. You don't see any record of it after the motion to dismiss. But I believe if you go prior, you'll see that that was in fact a witness. And if this case were to be remanded, that would certainly be testimony that the defendant would or the that the appellant would want to have the court hear.
Did the appellant make an offer of proof at trial of that she wanted to call that witness and what that witness would say?
Not of that particular witness. Yeah, there was a lengthy argument about an offer of proof, but it was on another issue.
Right, that was on the noise. Yeah,
that's right. And that's all I have to say. Thank you so much.
Thank you to both counsel. The case has been submitted, and we will issue an opinion within the statutory time frame.